is November 6th. It's a Thursday. So I think I said you had until November 10th. If you wanted to drop your paper off early to the submission box and get it in to get extra credit. Of course, before you do so, make sure you go on proflamatic.com and make sure you understand the directions, because that is how I'm going to be grading you. If you do not follow the directions, you will lose points. And obviously, you'll miss out on a chance to get an easy grade. And I'm pretty sure I said it to you at the beginning of the semester, because I pretty much say it every single class, and it's true. I've had students that were awful writers, just could not write, could not put a sentence together, but still walked away with a B or a B minus because they followed all of the directions. So make sure if you're going to try to get that extra credit, make sure you go over it carefully. And if you have any questions, reach out to me and I'll do my best to answer them. All right, before I get too far ahead of myself, the other thing that I want to remind you of is we do not have class on Tuesday. Tuesday is Veterans Day. So if you know anyone who served in the military, simply say thank you, because you could not be here but for their sacrifice. I know I'm going down to New York City. I'm going to be marching in the Veterans Day Parade to help give thanks to the veterans of our nation. So if you know like an uncle or a grandfather, just say thanks. All right, we left off. We have the last division of our court system to cover, and that is the probation department. We've dealt with the other seven departments already. We've dealt with the district courts, the Boston Municipal Court, Land Court, Superior Court, Housing Court, Probate, and of course the Juvenile Court. Well, the last department that's part of our judiciary is the Commissioner's Department of Probation. Probation is part of our court system. Criminal justice majors? Any of you criminal justice? What's probation? Okay, very good. Why is that there?
It works as a means to reintegrate people in society.
Yeah, does everyone who gets convicted of a crime, did they net? Because don't forget, a lot of crimes get committed that are not necessarily violent crimes. And if someone did not commit a violent crime, has a clear record, just got caught up in a stupid situation, should they be subjected to incarceration in a penitentiary? Well, Massachusetts feels that is not the case. Another aspect that is run by the Commissioner of Probate is parole. What's the difference between probation and parole? No, you guys don't know. So they have been incarcerated.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good. So probation is in lieu of incarceration. Parole is if you are released before time is served. Now, here's the catch. The decision on whether to release somebody who is in custody or in a penitentiary is done by the state parole board. Essentially, what occurs is the person is allowed to make a case before the board. But the catch is that the victim's family or the victim does have the ability to go in and essentially contest release. And by the way, someone would get parole because of good behavior. Again, maybe someone was in jail, they committed a crime, they're doing the time.
but they willingly go out on work details. You know, they don't get written up for any insubordination or any bad behavior. Well, that could be grounds, because again, the purpose of our system, hopefully, is to rehabilitate those who are convicted. But maybe someone is behaving themselves, and maybe the sheriff feels that it's worthy. But just because they go up before the state parole board, it doesn't mean they're going to get parole. Now, if they do, they are under the supervision of a parole officer. These work out of the courts. So there is an expectation, just like if you go on probation, that essentially you call and you check in. Because if the parolee fails to comply, back to jail they go. Or if they commit a new crime, back to jail they go. Now there are clear crimes in our legal system that parole will be denied. So if you, for instance, get convicted of murder one, you know, you will be subjected to life imprisonment with no chance of parole. That's actually in the statute. Questions? Probation. We've already said what probation is. Probation is when you basically go out without going to custody into a correctional system. This is done at the judge's discretion. If the judge, and this is not a jury decision, it's a judge's decision. If the judge, again, feels like the person never had any past priors, did something foolish, the person seems contrite, you know, pleading with the court for forgiveness, they will go out on probation. Now, the period, the length of time, and the conditions, those are all set by the court. You know, maybe somebody is on probation for 2 years, and as part of their conditions, they're not allowed to go to the neighborhood of the victim. Maybe they're required to engage in certain number of hours for community service. I had a buddy that got stopped for DUI. Of course, he called me up. He's like, "Could you be my lawyer?" And I laughed at him. I said, "Were you drunk?" He said, "Yes." I'm like, "Dumbass." Did not represent him, even though he was my friend. I don't do that. That was the other thing I told him. That's not the area of law I practice, but he ended up getting subject. It was his second offense, but it was the first offense in like 20 years. So he was on probation, I think, for a year. He got subjected to that breath lock. I don't know if you've seen any of those devices. The court has the power to basically mandate that you install this device that you have to breathe into, or it will not allow you to start your car. He had to deal with that for a year. And that sucked, because not all garages are licensed to work on them. So I think he lives down in Millville, so I think the closest garage for him was like Westboro, and the device broke all the time. If it was too cold, if it was too warm. So he ended up spending hundreds of dollars on maintenance. But he learned a lesson. As far as I know, he hasn't drank and drove since. Like with a parolee, if you are on probation, if you fail to comply with the terms, that could be the golden ticket to jail. Because probation will be revoked, and then you will actually serve your time in a penitentiary.
And just like there are parole officers, there are also probation officers. Typically there are two groups of probation workers. They either work with the district court, so they work with the superior court. Just like the parole, actually the parole officer will be appointed by the state parole board. Probation officers, those are determined by the judge shortly after trial. And ultimately, you have to report. You have to check in. My buddy had to check in, I think, once a week because it wasn't a major offense. But I've heard of situations where people had to call in at least once a day. But again, it depends upon the nature of the criminal act. I don't know, I don't have any stats on how many parole officers there are, but in Massachusetts, currently, there are 450 probation officers. So those of you thinking about going into criminal justice and you don't necessarily want to be a beat cop, you know, look into being a probation officer. It's a pretty good gig. All right, questions? All right. The last chunk of information I have has to do with who actually works in the courts besides the judges. Just like in the legislative branch, there are many people that work in the court. All you got to do is go into the courthouse, and you'll see secretaries, admins, assistant clerks, clerks, all of the people that keep those courts in operation. By law, every single court must have a clerk. The job of the clerk is to make sure everything is filed. They record the calendar. They block off, you know, which courtroom is going to be used for which particular trial. They make sure all the subpoenas go out, etc., etc., etc. In every county, there is a register of the probate. These are elected officials. They serve 6-year terms. The current register of probate for Worcester County is Stephanie Fatman, the wife of Senator Ryan Fatman. She, I believe, is in her second term. But every single county has one. Basically, the Register of the Probate, their job is to oversee the probate and the family court, FYI. There are also assistant clerks. You know, they engage in clerical or secretarial duties, as determined by the clerk. We also have sheriffs in every single county, elected position. I believe they serve 4-year terms, I think. Now, for those of you not from Massachusetts, our sheriffs are unique. In every other state, our sheriffs have law enforcement powers. They are essentially like county cops. In Massachusetts, sheriffs actually have no law enforcement authority. But rather, their job is to oversee the penitentiaries, the county jails. The sheriff's department also handles serving notices and enforcement orders from the court. I'm sure you've seen TV where someone gets served papers
you know, a subpoena to show up to court. It's typically the sheriff's department that delivers them. The sheriff's department is also responsible for transporting convicted felons from the courthouse to the penitentiary and back. Every now and then, if you drive on the highway, you'll see a sheriff's van. We're very lucky in Worcester County. We have one of the best sheriffs in the whole state, Lou Evangelitis. Sheriff Lou has been the sheriff, I think he's on his fourth term. And I know some guys that work for the prisons. They absolutely love him. He's a hands-on type leader. He's very intelligent. He's very articulate. But one of the big programs that he has allowed to operate at the Worcester County House of Corrections is he engages in a lot of rehabilitative services. The prisoners, for example, allowed to plant and grow fresh vegetables. So the farm that they have up there is so big, what they'll do is they'll take the excess vegetables and they'll bring them to the food pantries, or they'll bring them to the senior center. The sheriff's department in Worcester also brings out work details. You know, in my time as being a selectman in Sutton, the sheriff's department has brought prisoners to paint town hall. They've also worked at the school. They worked down at the baseball fields. You know, because you're going to give the prisoners a chance to do some community service to help get a better chance of getting an early parole. Not all sheriffs are as active as Lou. But if you ever see him out and about, you can't miss him. He's like 6'5". But he's a really good guy. So again, if you're thinking about going into criminal justice, look into working for the sheriff's department. That's also a good gig. Also working in our courts are what in Massachusetts are called court officers, but in other states they're called bailiffs. These are the men and women that maintain law and order in the buildings themselves. They are in charge with checking everyone who comes into the building. Those are the men and the women that make you go through the metal detectors. They are the ones that maintain decorum in the courtroom. So if someone gets out of hand, the judge will order them to be removed. They're going to be removed by the court officers. They're also in charge of maintaining the security of the judges, the jurors, the witnesses, and the prisoners. Because downstairs in the basement of every court, there are jails. So if somebody is in that jail, it's the court officers that make sure they're not assaulted while in the custody of the courts. And the last officers that I have in my notes are the attorneys that work for the state. The top lawyer is the Attorney General, who, as we mentioned previously, is elected coterminously with the governor. But in every single county elects a district attorney. Joe Early is the DA for Worcester County. He's been the district attorney for as long as I can remember. You want to talk about nepotism? He's actually the son of a former congressman, Joe Early Sr. But he's an interesting cat. Generally speaking, he runs a good show. But he's like any politician. You know, he likes getting lots of attention, camera attention, news attention, you know, when there's good news to exploit.
Of course, working for every single district attorney are our staff of assistant district attorneys. And if any of you ever think about going to law school, a lot of people, before they start working for their own firm or a large law firm, many of them cut their teeth being assistant district attorneys. Just a heat of advice, though, the pay is not great, and it's a lot of work. But it's a good way to kind of get a good real understanding of how the law works. All right, question on any of the staff? All right, couple other features of the Massachusetts court system. Just want to bring. I lied. I guess there's one more line. Medical examiners. If there is a death, it is the medical examiners or an assistant medical examiner that gets called out to the scene. They're the ones who gather the data. So the last death, and by the way, it's any death. Even if the EMTs or the firefighters, report because there's a senior citizen who's coding. Any death, the medical examiners come out and then investigate. But the last real tragedy that we experienced in Sutton, this was about 2 years ago. There was a little girl. I think she had, I don't remember if she had Down syndrome or she was autistic. But she managed to sneak out of her house when the babysitter was dealing, I think, with a sibling. And unfortunately, she wandered through the neighborhood, climbed up into an above-ground pool, fell in, drowned. Well, that whole neighborhood was shut down for over a day as the medical examiner came in and basically examined the body and made a determination that there was no foul play or all right. One more time. Any questions on any of the officers? All right. The second to the last component of our judicial system in Massachusetts is an entity known as the Judicial Council. This is an unpaid board made up of six judges or former judges. Plus four members of the bar. What this council is responsible for is to study the operations of our court systems and make recommendations for improvement. If there is a situation where a judge is not acting in an honorable fashion, they will come up before the Judicial Council for review. While the Judicial Council doesn't have the authority to remove a judge from the bench, they do have the authority to make a recommendation to the Governor's Council. Because ultimately, the Governor's Council has the ability to remove judges from the bench. But as I mentioned to you last class, one of the biggest problems we have in Massachusetts is the fact that public defenders are on strike. So there are criminals that are being arrested and just let go. Because under state law, if there's no public defenders appointed for them, basically they are released. So hopefully the governor will get off her laurels and fix this problem. Because if someone gets arrested for assault and battery, you don't want them going out the back door of the police station. You want to make sure that the victim is able to get justice. All right, the last area is something that I've never been able to do
and nor will I ever be able to do. At least until I give up my law license. And that's serving on a jury. Jury duty is a huge, huge, huge component of the rights and privileges afforded to citizens of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Why? Well, because under our legal system, anyone accused of a crime has a right to a trial by jury. Why? Does anyone know why the British developed the idea of trial by jury? This is a British concept. It's one of the many components of our legal system that we inherited from the motherland. Why trial by jury? What is a jury? From where?
From the community.
So why would you want to have those people making a decision in a criminal trial or a civil trial? Wouldn't you want some legal expert making decisions? No thoughts? That's a huge, huge component. You want the community essentially setting the standards for what is tolerable and what is not. And you want them deciding, you know, levels of punishment. But what about questions of innocence or guilt? Why would you want a jury making that decision? And by the way, in a criminal trial, it's 12. Why would you want 12 members of a community deciding whether someone is actually guilty of the crime that they are accused of? Okay. So therefore, the jury is what? Or at least in theory.
Unbiased.
Yeah, you hope you have an unbiased jury. Because obviously the prosecution wants punishment. And the prosecution is the state, the government. It's the government that's bringing the accusations, the charges. So we know what outcome the government wants, and we also know what outcome the defense wants. They want to be acquitted. So you have two sides in this competition that I talked about when we started the judiciary, the court system, in this death battle. So the whole idea of a jury is to have a neutral set of eyes. Someone who doesn't have any skin in the game. Someone that is going to be unbiased, they're going to listen to the facts, and they're going to do their best to make a decision based on the law. Now, FYI, if you're registered to vote, your name is in the jury pool. And you may receive a little letter in the mail saying, congratulations, you have jury duty. Have any of you served on jury duty before? Jury duty involves the men and women sitting in the courtroom and listening and observing all of the evidence presented in the trial. The jury then is supposed to determine what the true facts are and then reach a verdict, a decision, based upon those facts.
If it's a criminal trial, there must be a unanimous decision in order to find guilt. Or to have them be acquitted, found not guilty. If it's a civil case, it's either 10 out of 12 or 5 out of 6. Sometimes civil trials only have 6 jurors. But it doesn't require unanimous consent. It's either 10 out of 12 or 5 out of 6. Now, what happens if the jury cannot agree on an outcome? Any of you paying attention to the Karen retrial? The first go around? Well, and if the jury can't decide one way or another, the jury gets dismissed. And it's up to the judge if the judge is going to order a new trial or simply dismiss the case because of a hung jury. Questions? In our legal system, not just in Massachusetts, but in the federal courts as well as all the states, there is also an entity that gets pooled together known as the grand jury. Does anyone know what the grand jury is? The grand jury is a pool of 23 people that in Massachusetts is basically summoned to be on call for up to 3 months. If there is a major criminal case, the grand jury is impaneled to review the evidence used by the police as grounds of the arrest warrant. So there's no trial. In fact, the defense is not allowed in the grand jury. But basically what the grand jury does is it hears the state's evidence. And it decides if there's at least probable cause. In other words, is there enough evidence to at least justify the arrest? Maybe not enough to convict the person. But is the evidence presented by the state enough to justify a trial? Now, while 23 people sit in a grand jury, it takes 13 out of the 23 to agree to indict the person. Because in order to have a trial, you have to be indicted. So does the state have enough evidence? Now, if it's just a district court trial where the maximum sentence is less than 5 years, chances are the person is going to be arraigned after they get arrested. So they'll be brought in before the judge, and the judge will make that indictment. But if it's a major crime, something significant, then it will be decided by the grand jury. All right. Who does the picking? Well, computers. Everyone's social security number who's registered to vote is entered into a database, and on any given day, the computer is tasked with randomly selecting enough people to get called to a courthouse to sit there in the event that there is actually a trial. Now in Massachusetts, any district court trial by law must be done in a day. So it's usually a condensed. But if it's a superior court trial, that could take several days or even several weeks. Now we are the first state in the nation to implement the one-day rule for our minor criminal cases. One other thing, under Massachusetts law, if you get summoned to jury duty and it's more than a day, your employer must basically allow you to go to jury duty. And your employer must pay you for your first 3 days of service. If it's more than 3 days, you will receive a voucher from the state of $50 per day, which isn't a lot, but it's enough usually to cover your parking and your lunch. And your employer cannot hold you being called to jury duty against you. Now here's the funny little thing. And I've only learned this because of the last two times I was called to jury duty. Most people that get called win the lottery, because you're supposed to call in like 2 weeks before to check in. And typically most people, their jury duty gets canceled. If it gets canceled, your name goes back into the system. In theory, you should not be get called again for 3 years, but sometimes you do get called earlier. But this little card that I spent $400 a year to keep in my wallet, this is my get out of jury duty free card. Because every time I've had to go in, you fill out a little questionnaire. And they ask you, what is your employment? So I write, I am an attorney. Or sometimes they put, I'm a lawyer. Well, the attorneys for both sides, in a process called voir dire, where they basically impanel the jury, reviews the backgrounds of everyone sitting in the jury box. The last two times I went, the court officer that was overseeing the potential jury pool looked at the application and said, yeah, you're going home first. Because the attorneys for both sides did not want a lawyer on the jury. Why? Why do you think?
Because you wouldn't be unbiased.
Yeah, exactly. Because I have a better chance of understanding the law. And so I could basically, in all likelihood, you know, kind of be very persuasive in the jury pool, which could potentially lead to bias. And that's something that neither the prosecution nor the defense would want, to contaminate that jury pool. They want to keep the jury as naive as possible.
But had I known that perk, I would have gone to law school earlier. All right. Last two clicks, and then we're done with this slide. Committee for Public Counsel Services. This is a statewide entity that has divisions in all of the districts where people who are indigent, who don't have money, who can't afford to hire counsel, they can contact the PCS for either free or significantly reduced fees. So if you cannot afford an attorney, this might be an avenue for you. And last but not least, small claims. Small claims operates in every single district court.
if you are suing somebody or a business for less than $7,000, you don't need to have a trial. You can go into the court and you can go through a simple, informal adjudication process. Instead of going before a judge, you probably go before a judge magistrate. You don't need lawyers. You can represent yourself. You also can bring in non-attorneys to help you. But ultimately, the claim is determined by the magistrate. My last time in a courtroom proceeding was a small claim that my contractor, one of my past contractors, brought against me because I did not pay him the full bill. Because in my humble opinion, he did not finish the job. And FYI, under Massachusetts law, it's the homeowner that has the final say of when a job is completed. So I told him I wanted him to finish the job. He refused. He sued me for the $5,000. Well, I had so much evidence proving my side that he did not even show up. So even though I was the defendant, I had that claim against me dismissed. But if you get in a small fender bender, if you have a claim against a business, typically the best route to go is small claims. Questions? All right, well, make sure you go through and make sure you go through the judiciary chapter. So that brings two chapters under our belt for our third exam. And we'll start off with this one. And with luck, we'll finish it on Thursday after Veterans Day. And then you'll have your third exam at some point thereafter. And then we can begin the road to the final. The bureaucracy. The bureaucracy is the vast series of government agencies that are tasked with providing the services demanded by law. Now, FYI, any type of large entity requires the bureaucratic structure. Corporations have bureaucracies. They have offices. They have divisions, subdivisions, each tasked with doing a specific role. All modern governments have some form of bureaucracy. Because you cannot deliver these programs without it. Most programs offered by the state or the federal government are all handled by bureaucratic agencies, the alphabet agencies, the DEA, DESE, DESE, the ATF, the IRS, the EPA. Those are all government agencies tasked with administering or running some type of program. Chances are, any government contact that you've had has not been with an elected official. But if you've interacted with the government, you've probably interacted with a department in the bureaucracy. This school, it's a state college. It's part of the bureaucracy. It delivers services. So the fact that you are here, you are engaging with government.
Now, according to the book, in the bureaucracy chapter, it states that today there is roughly about 30 million bureaucrats in our country. That number's frightening. It's almost one out of every 100 people in our country. No, that's wrong math. One out of every 10 people works for the government in some form or capacity. In Massachusetts, there are about 550,000 state employees. That in itself is amazing. We only have, I think it's like 8.2 million people. I don't even know if it's that high. Might still be in the sevens. I've lost track of how many people live in Massachusetts. But we have more than a half a million people that work in either for the state government or local governments. I don't know why your taxes are so high. And in the state budget, about 60% of revenue that is spent by our state government goes to the salaries of state or local employees. And guess what the largest block is in any category? Teachers. In Massachusetts, I believe at last, the last numbers that I have in there, I don't remember when I checked them, there are over 80,000 teachers in Massachusetts. And the average salary in Massachusetts for a teacher is over $80,000. It's expensive. It's a huge lion's share of any municipality's budget. In Sutton, I think our schools are now, I think it's still under 60. I think it's about 59 or 58% of our budget just goes to the schools, and most of that money goes to the salaries of the teachers and staff. All right, going back to the general concepts from the book, how do bureaucracies work? Well, there are a couple of key features that make any bureaucratic system function. And that is the design. Generally speaking, it's a hierarchy. Top down. The higher up the bureaucratic chain you go, the more authority you have. The lower you are on the totem pole, the less power and authority you have. What's the most important task of the people higher up on this ladder of authority? Any of you have jobs? What is the duties of the people that may have higher rank?
Management.
Yeah, one of the most important functions of this hierarchy is the people at the highest levels are in charge of supervising the people at the lower levels. And if you're talking about a government bureaucracy, their job is to make sure that the government agencies do what they're supposed to do. But there's also a division of labor in every single bureaucracy. Not everyone does the same job. But specific individuals are assigned specific duties. And as a result of this division, there could be divisions on vertical levels. So I'll give you my favorite, easiest mental example to get your head around, and that is think of the staff at, say, Walmart. The everyday hourly wage earner at Walmart. You go and you get a job. You may be a cashier. You may be a stock boy or a girl or whatever they call them now. Your job may be to be a greeter. Your job may be to go get the carriages. Your job may be to custodial. But all of those people are the bottom rung. They are the workers. But each one has their own separate duties. Chances are you're not going to find a cashier stocking the shelves. You're not going to find someone in charge of stocking the shelves, you know, going and getting the carriages. Everyone's going to have their specific roles that they're supposed to engage in. But of course, above them, if you're a cashier, there may be a head cashier. You know, somebody who has the responsibility of making sure all the cashiers are doing their job. If you're a stock boy or girl, you know, maybe you work in the toy department. Well, there may be an area assistant manager that's in charge of making sure that the toy department looks good. And then, of course, above them, there's HR. There's payroll. You know, technically they are higher up in the rank, but they have their own specific tasks. And then, of course, the highest person on the food chain in the store is the store manager. They're supposed to work as a team. They're supposed to make sure that everyone does what they're supposed to do. So that way, when you go into Walmart, you, the customer, can basically go in, find what you need, and get out. Well, the same is true in government bureaucracies as well. The last component. There are some offices that are within the hierarchy that have tasks that are more important than people above or below. These are typically referred to as staff officers. Staff officers may be the store manager. Staff officer may be, you know, the head of produce. You know, these are management level officials. They could be the head of the money room. I don't even know what they call the money room in Walmart. But in the finance office. But there are also the shift supervisors. You know, those would technically be considered line officers. The same is true in government. So, an army lieutenant who's commanding soldiers in the field is a line officer. But there may be a colonel that's in charge of transportation or supply. They would be a staff officer. Questions? All right, the last general component. Actually, we've got two. Second to the last general component is specialization. Now, the weird thing about a bureaucracy, a bureaucratic system, is that the person that's highest on the food chain generally knows the least in terms of specific duties that are performed in the organization. Whereas someone at the lower level may be specialized. So I never worked for Walmart, but down the road, behind where Higgins Museum used to be, for a while there was a Sam's Club. I don't know what's in the big white and blue building that's kind of in the back. I don't know what's there now. But that building was built as a like BJ's like wholesale club. It was called Pace. And I worked there. And I worked in the electronics department. So it was my job just to make sure the computers were out and displayed, and that all of like the paper and all the office supplies, you know, that was my area. Why? Well, because I actually knew a little bit about computers. So they put me there. So if there was ever a customer that came in that had a question on the computer, no matter where I was, no matter what I was doing, I would get called on the walkie-talkie. And I would have to go and answer the questions. The irony was, is I ended up getting promoted before I quit. And I became a forklift officer or operator. Got to drive one of those stand-up forklifts. Those are so fun. But confusing, because when you spun the crank, it's actually backwards of a steering wheel. But anyway, so I was doing the one who would go out and pull the pallets down, you know, if a customer needed something or, you know, make sure everything was out on the floor. But even though I was a forklift officer, there would be times when no one else would be there in the computer section and I would still get the call. So I had specific duties. But you know what I never knew how to do? I never knew how to run the cash registers. I was never a cashier. I didn't get that skill set. But the funny thing was, is we had a regional supervisor come in, a regional manager, and started asking, or I don't know, he was yelling at like one of my colleagues, one of my co-workers, about like the way that the pallets were kind of sticking out underneath the bottom rack. And I actually said, well, here's my key, the forklift, you can go fix it if you want. And he didn't know how to drive a forklift. So this is a manager that's trying to tell us how to do our job, but he didn't know how to do it himself. But he didn't have to, because that wasn't part of his duties. His duties was just to make sure the store was clean. Questions? All right. Another important aspect of bureaucracy is a characteristic is rules. The advantage of a bureaucratic model is that decisions are typically made by rules or procedures. This is done to remove individual discretion. So, if you go into a Target or you go into a Walmart or Market Basket, all of the items are arranged in the store based on store plot plans. Who decided to put the milk in Market Basket in the first section when you walk in? Well, that was the corporate decision. So even if the store manager wants to maybe put the milk and stuff in the middle of the store, that would be against the rules. Because corporate wants standardization, consistency. Anybody who doesn't follow the rules, follows the chain of command, will find themselves removed. Of course, this squashes creativity. But again, if you're a business or you're a bureaucratic agency, you don't exist to be creative. You exist to perform a service. Questions? Well, as it turns out, governments are not the only social institutions that operate on a bureaucratic model. Instead, as I said, any large-scale organization, corporations, the college, hospitals, anything that is large, that is multifaceted, has to have a bureaucratic structure in order for it to operate. But there is a big difference between government bureaucracies and private bureaucracies. Anyone know what the biggest difference are or is?
One depends on taxes and then the other on profit.
Ah, so what does that mean? One relies on taxes, One relies on profits.
It means that the private one is going to want to provide the best service comparable to the least expensive means of production. And then the public one, it's kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it, but basically doesn't work.
Yeah, you're right. The private bureaucratic structure focuses on the bottom line. So, they want to maximize profit, and they want to minimize expenses. So, if you have an incompetent employee that works for a private bureaucracy, chances are they're going to get fired. But the government, on the other hand, they don't have to operate on a profit margin. They can spend every last dollar in the budget. In fact, I remember back, it was the last public school system that I worked before I started teaching at the collegiate level. It was up in Leominster. And we're sitting there, I think it was the Samoset Middle School. No, it wasn't there. I had moved over to the high school at that point. I was working in the junior high. I think I was teaching ninth grade. The superintendent comes in before the school semester starts. And the superintendent essentially tells us that the city council is watching our spending. So make sure you spend every single dollar in the budget. Because if you don't spend every single dollar in the budget, the city council is going to pull back dollars next fiscal year. Clawback. So, we had to go and get post-its and highlighters and Sharpies and just to an nth degree. I remember my closet where I kept the little bit of supplies that I needed. It was just like jam-packed because we were told to spend. And by the way, being a school teacher was great. Particularly if you made it past your third year, because you had tenure. I actually was on, this was when I was still down in middle school, because there was a woman that was across the hall. She supposedly was teaching science. All she did, because I could see in the room across. I would walk by my door and I'd look out, and all she was doing was just playing, like, videos. Not of, like, science documentaries, but just, like, videos. Every single day there was a video. And so one day I asked one of my students who came in, I'm like, what are you watching? And it was like cartoons. I'm like, was there a point to it? No, she just felt like playing cartoons today. Well, she was not tenured, so she got fired. Because she was a new teacher. But down the other end of the hall was a teacher that had been a teacher for 25 years. And guess what? She wasn't doing much better. But she was protected. She could not be fired. Because the union supported her. So unlike the private sector where you could be fired for incompetence, low performance, if you work for the government, it's next to impossible to get fired. Particularly if you've got tenure. So, FYI, what the public school teachers, in order to get a bad teacher out, they had to be evaluated, they had to receive a negative evaluation, then they had to have a meeting, and they had like a year or two to basically correct whatever was noted. And even if they didn't correct it fully, they could get another, 2 years of probation. So you could have a bad teacher that actually didn't know the subject matter in a classroom for 5 or 6 or 7 years before they could be removed. Why? Because public bureaucracies don't care about the bottom line. They have this pool of money and they will spend it. Now, why
Well, it's the nature of what government does. Government is supposed to provide a service. And some services you really can't put a dollar figure on. You know, what is the justifiable expense to provide a good education or a decent education to kids? You know, what's the dollar amount? What's the right amount of money to spend? Well, some kids are independent learners. They can figure things out themselves. Some kids need extra help. So can you put a dollar number on there? If it was a charter school, they do. They figure out what the bottom line is, and that's what they provide. But if it's a public school, they don't. And the same is true with any bureaucratic agencies. Questions? All right, the next section, it's going to take me more than 10 minutes to get through, so I'm not going to bother. So, just to be reminding you of the two things that I said at the beginning of class, you have until November 10th if you want to submit your paper for extra credit. But like I said, make sure you go at profitmanic.com, make sure you understand what I'm grading you on. And also, we do not have class on Tuesday, as it's Veterans Day.